This is Corpse Run Radio.
We are the Forsaken. We are the Forsaken.
Hello, darlings, and welcome back to Corpse Run Radio. This is episode 13, my very favorite number. I shouldn't be talking a lot this episode because I'm already late getting this out, thanks to my fabulous two-week vacation. But I do have a couple of things to mention. Florida has no winter, and Jamaica has giant, terrifying spiders in their tropical forests. But more importantly, huge congratulations to our trivia question winners from episode 12, and that was the very quick listener at King Richard on Twitter, and also the lovely Hastor of the wonderful Group Quest podcast. For their fast and correct responses, they both received a Lil KT pet. One was donated by Ro of the Realm Maintenance podcast, and the other from our very own trivia question provider extraordinaire, Grand Negus. Now, we have decided to do it again, with another Lil KT hanging in the balance because he's just so cute and evil. Again, graciously donated by Grand Negus. To quickly refresh your memory, you must be the very first person to tweet us the correct answer to the trivia question. It has to be in a complete sentence and has to begin with the phrase, Grand Negus says. You can refer back to episode 12 for a more in-depth description if need be, because if you don't get it exactly right, you will be disqualified. And nobody wants that because it feels, well, really poopy. Without further ado, this month's Grand Negus Says trivia question is, what location did Sylvanas invite her sister Verisa to meet up with her during Garrosh Hellscream's trial? Now, if there was more than one location that they met up at, and I cannot recall if there was, this would be the very first one that we're talking about. Also, I know that the Twitter character limitation can be tricky, but that's part of the fun, darlings, and surely an obstacle you can easily overcome, so good luck. And finally, our darling Grand Negus is going to be a guest host on the Lore Walkers Roundtable podcast this Saturday, which would be February the 7th at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It will be episode 66, and they do have a live chat room that you can join if you hear this in time. I'll include a link in the show notes, and most excitingly, they're going to be talking about our very own Dark Lady, Sylvanas Windrunner, so please do check it out. You can find more information at lorewalkersroundtable.com. All right, darlings, let's get this show on the road. I am going to attempt to make this episode a little shorter than usual in the hopes that I can release it faster. We will see. But first, here's a little message from my friend Robin Blay, who is just adorable. Thank you, Robin.
Avast! Avast and behind! I hear that Corpse Run Radio is becoming bigger than Deathwing. So I suggest, my mateys, that you be listening to Corpse Run Radio. Ha ha!
From collecting to leveling to battling, welcome to Lita's Littlest Pet Shop. For all of your pet battling needs.
Hello, sweeties, and today we're going to talk about one of my favorite things I like to do in game, and that is to visit Darkmoon Fair. Now, Darkmoon Fair only happens for 1 week out of the month, and that is always the first week of every month that it appears in game. Now, there are two pet battle tamers that you can go and see. One of them is Jeremy Fiesel, but the second one is newer to the game, and that is Christoph von Fiesel. Now, Christoph is one that you can battle, and he will give you what we call a Greater Darkmoon Pet Supplies bag, and from that you have a chance of getting Sid the Squid. Now, I was very lucky to get one of these, and I must admit, it is the cutest little thing. So let's have a talk about what Sid the Squid has. So he comes from the Magic family. Animations that he does is he drools and emits light green gas clouds. Very, very cute. Okay, let's talk about his pet battle information. So, level 1, the slot 1 ability is you get Water Jet. That is 100% hit chance. It blasts the enemy with a spray of water, dealing aquatic damage. This is great against elemental and not so good against magic. Then at level 10, you get Tidal Wave. Again, this is 100% hit chance, and it will deal aquatic damage to the enemy's pets. It also destroys objects created by both teams. Very good against elemental, and not so good against magic. Now, the slot 2 abilities. At level 2, you get Bubble. It's a 8-round cooldown. It's a bubble surrounds you, blocking the next 2 attacks. Then at level 15, there is Healing Stream. This has a 3-round cooldown. Calls upon the healing streams, restoring health to the user, and half that to other aquatic allies. Then the slot 3 ability. At level 4, you get Whirlpool. This is a 3-round cooldown. 100% hit chance causes a whirlpool to form under the enemy pet. In 2 rounds, the opponent's pet will take aquatic damage and be rooted for 2 rounds. This is great against elemental and not so good against magic. Then at level 20, you get Cleansing Rain. This is a 3-round cooldown. It restores health to your team and calls down a Cleansing Rain for 9 rounds. During a Cleansing Rain, the duration of hostile damage overtime effects is reduced by 1 round, and aquatic abilities deal 25% more damage. Now, the passive quality for magic pets. Magic pets cannot be dealt more than 35% of their maximum health in 1 attack. Also, with damage taken, it is 50% up from dragon kill abilities and 33% down from aquatic abilities. So, if you're looking for something a little bit challenging and a little bit different to do, don't forget Darkmoon Fair is that thing that happens once a month. And I must admit, yes, I love to go see my Jeremy Fiesel and Christoph von Fiesel. And yes, they are both still weasels, but I have to go see them, and I love to battle my pets with them. Anyway, that is all from me today. I hope you have great fun with your pet battles and your pet collecting, and we will talk to you later. Bye!
Hello, and welcome to Ask Cameo, the segment where you, the listener, just ask me some questions, and I'll do my very best to come up with an answer for you. Our question this week comes from the reigning members of the Guild Aberration on Earthling Ring US. Happens to be my guild, because a requirement for my raiders is to have the legendary quest ring started. So the question is, how do you get your legendary ring? Very simple. At level 98, you will receive a quest called Call of the Archmage from Khadgar's servant walking around your garrison. You'll then be asked to seek out and talk to Khadgar in the Sangara Swamp. Once you find him, he will then give you a quest to go into the five-man Skyreach to obtain a pure Solidanium band from High Sage Virex. So last boss, complete, return to Khadgar, and receive the next quest, Khadgar's Task. Simply completed by going outside with Khadgar, speaking with him. Once you're done talking to him, you will then receive an item level 640 ring from him based on your loot specialization. You will also be able to buy the other rings for your specs from Zudi Fizzle Fury. He's right outside to the side of the tower. The 640 ring is 400 gold. The 680 ring is 800 gold. And the 690 ring will be 1200 gold. Now, you must complete the steps of the quest in order to purchase the particular ring. So if you already have the 640 ring, you can purchase the other 640 rings, 680 rings, etc. The next quest you will receive from Khadgar will have to be completed in five-man heroics. First one is Core of the Flame. It's completed in the Blood Maw Slag Mines by killing the last boss. The next quest is the Core of Iron from the Engine in the Grimrail Depot. Now this will be an item that you loot after the last boss is dead. After you loot the boss, there'll be a big engine behind the boss. You'll want to loot the engine. Don't forget to do that. A lot of people do. The next one is the Core of Life, which is collected in the Everbloom 5-man by defeating and looting the last boss, Yulnun. You'll also be given quests from Khadgar called Draenor's Secret Power, requiring you to save 4,986 Apexis Crystals to turn in. However, if you're short on quest log space, you do not need to pick up that quest at this time. Just remember that you are going to need 4,986 crystals to complete it. Once you have completed all three core quests, Khadgar will have a quest for you called Tracking Terran Gore. You'll need to go into the Archidun heroic, defeat Terran Gore, and loot the green pile of blood that is on the ground. Once you have completed that quest and Draenor's Secret Power is completed, you will receive a quest called Eyes of the Archmage. It again is a simple speak to Khadgar and listen quest. Then you will receive quest Fugitive Dragon, where you will need to meet up with Khadgar in the northern parts of Nagran. Speak to him, get the quest, The Dragon's Tale. Follow Chromie around the sparkling footprints to the ground, listening to the story and searching for what happened to Khadgar Dormu. Once you locate Khadgar Dormu, turn in the quest and start Tarnished Bronze quest by selecting the role and defeating the spirit of Khadgar Dormu. Once he is defeated, turn in the quest, receive quest Powers Unleashed. Return to Khadgar's tower, speak to him, and receive your item level 680 ring. And begins the next set of quests. The Emperor's Fall, completed by going into High Maw Raid and killing Karash for the Fellbreaker's Tomb and Emperor Marnok for the Signal of the Sorcerer's King. You will also have a quest, Legacy of the Sorcerer's King, requiring you to collect 125 Abigator Stones off the bosses in High Maw, Garrison Work Orders, Garrison Follow Missions are ways to get them as well. Once those two quests are completed, return to Khadgar, turn in the quest, then you'll get the quest, The Scrying Game. Talk to Khadgar, watch him as he finds Gul'dan. Once you have done, you will receive the quest, Hunters Haunted, where you chase after Garana, defeat her at the end. She runs really fast, so I would suggest mounting up, catching up to her during the time. She puts a dial on you that does like 20k damage every couple seconds. So that's a way to keep from taking some damage. If you have your special ability from the zone that you're in with the bombs, make sure you use that as well. Helps out quite a bit. If you lose track of where she is, you can also follow the green footprints on the ground. Another way to find her. Once you have defeated Garona, return to Coradain Felsong, and turn in the quest, and then you will receive your item level 690 ring. And then you will receive the next four quests in the chain, which currently cannot be completed yet because Blackrock Foundry is not out. Most of these quests will take place in there. One of the quests is called Flamebender's Tomb. You get that tomb by defeating Khajra in the raid Blackrock Foundry. Next quest is Heart of Fury, which is from the Fury Elemental Fury in the Furnace in Blackrock Foundry. And then there will be Reverse Privacy by acquiring the Transmuturic Orb from the Dread Grotto, which is also in Blackrock Foundry. Next quest is Might of the Elemental Lords. This is done by collecting 3 elemental tablets by collecting elemental runes. Now, the elemental runes fall off the bosses in Blackrock Foundry. You can get follower quests for them, as well as they will be in your daily work orders as well. Now, it takes 300 runes to make one tablet. That being said, you're going to need 900 runes in order to make all 3 tablets that you need. Well, that's all I've got for you guys this week. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to Ask Cameo. If you have any questions at all, please, please send them in. Need something to answer. As well as if you guys have any ideas for my segment, feel free to throw those in there as well. I can be found at Cameo666 on Twitter. I am Cameo hashtag 1392 in-game. As well as email is askcameo@gmail.com. Again, that's Cameo with a K. I love you all. For the Horde, I'll see you guys in the next episode of Corpse Run Radio.
This is Silver Laetomi with a song called Heimal.
I'm taking on all comers, Iron Horde or Ogre. So tell the Gorian Empire their days are over. Don't need a summon, just say when to zone in. Call out for Max. Sure, what?
Welcome back to the kitchen. I see the master is hungry. A little trip this time round. Oh, yes. A fishing trip, yes. Into the wonderful Cape of Stranglethorn. I've got some plans for this evening's dinner. Right. Thank goodness for portals. Ah, yes, this beautiful, wonderful babbling brook. we just cast my line. With any luck, it won't be long now. Oh, yes. Tasty rock scale cod I'm fishing for. Your head cod? Lovely with chips, but strictly fried fish this time round. Oh, and while we wait, we might as well do some digging and see if I can pick up some giant clam scotcho. Oh, yes. One of my favourites. One of the master's delicacies. Yeah. Where's the spade? Now, yes, that'll do. There's quite a few there. Must be hungry. They'll boil up nicely, won't they? Looks like maybe a fish already on the line as well. Let's reel that in. Alright, got what we need. Let's head back to the kitchen. Get this stuff boiled up. I'm sure the master's being impatient. Just put one of the two of these here in the pot. Ah, yes. It'll boil for a moment, sir. This kitchen is a mess. Let's get some creatures to come clean it up. Waiting on food is just a bore. I'm sure it's ready now. Here we are. Let me just serve it up. Ah. Tell the master dinner is served.
You now know their leaders. You know what forged them into the monstrosities they have become. Put your seal on that order, and I will be the first to answer the call.
Why are you so eager for this fight, Murad? For a paladin, you seem as bloodthirsty as the enemy.
It is not blood I seek. When you look at me, what do you see?
I see a paragon, a champion of the light.
What you cannot see is the burden I carry each day. I was there during the assault on Shetreth City, our beloved dwelling of light, under siege by a relentless army of demon-corrupted orcs. I witnessed countless acts of brutality, unspeakable horrors from atop the wall.
Murad! Take the last group of refugees to safety! Go! Now!
Yes, Exarch! I did as I was commanded. I gathered the refugees, led them away from battle. And then I saw him. It was my charge to see the refugees to safety, yet the horrors I had witnessed, the suffering, despite all my vows, vengeance burned in my heart.
Take the path through the tunnel. I'll rejoin you when I can. We have no weapons.
The path is safe. The light will be with you. Now go! I would avenge the countless Brani who had perished! I struck out to find the refugees. My heart fell. The path had not been safe. The light that I promised would be with them had forsaken them. Instead, just as I had. I know I may not return, but if there is even the barest chance of preventing the atrocities I witnessed from happening again, then I offer myself gladly.
We are all haunted by the past, Murad. Few of us ever get the opportunity to change it.
Summon our champions! Make ready for war! Azeroth needs its heroes now. More than ever.
Welcome to the World of Warcraft Crash Course for the Elemental Shaman. In this video, we'll give you a very brief overview of what you'll need to do to get started playing an Elemental Shaman at level 90. Elemental, like most casters, uses mana as a resource, but most of the time, that shouldn't be a big concern. Instead, you'll be watching for a couple of important proc effects and reacting to them accordingly. Before you start fighting, you'll want to make sure you have Lightning Shield active. Then, start by casting Flame Shock, a damage over time effect. It has a pretty long duration, but keep an eye on it. You always want to have Flame Shock active. Next, you'll cast Lava Burst. This is your hardest hitting ability. Make sure to use it whenever you can. Otherwise, you want to fill time with Lightning Bolt while you watch for procs. The most important proc is Lava Surge. Every time Flame Shock ticks, there's a chance for it to reset the cooldown of Lava Burst and make it instant cast. Use Lava Burst immediately when that pops up. Also, every time you hit a target with Lightning Bolt, it can add up to 3 stacks to your Lightning Shield. Once you've got 15 stacks, you'll see a pop-up for Fulmination, which means you should use Earth Shock to unleash those extra stacks of Lightning Shield on your target. There's a lot more to learn if you want to truly master your Shaman, but we hope that this primer gives you the knowledge you need to get headed in the right direction. Once you've gotten a handle on the basics, it's a good idea to spend some time reading through your spellbook, talents, and glyphs to learn about the other abilities we haven't touched on here. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you on Draenor.
Hello everyone! We finished up the unique storylines for both the Alliance and the Horde within Shadowmoon Valley and Frostfire Ridge. From this point on, the storyline becomes pretty mirrored for both factions. You will see a couple of different NPCs, a couple of minor differences, but overall, it's the same storyline. I hope you all had a great new year. Let's begin 2015 with the story of Gorgron. The Alliance. After securing Shadowmoon Valley, they send a small strike force into Gorgrond because Rangari report suggests that the area it might hold ancient secrets or primal knowledge that we might be able to use against the Iron Hordes. The Horde, they helped out the Frostwolf clan with securing Frostfire Ridge, and they sent a small strike force to launch a counterattack against the Iron Hordes. Both factions, they share a common goal, taking the battle to the Iron Horde. And the Frostwolf clan, they make contact with the Laughing Skull clan, since this clan knows the zone better than anyone.
Laughing Skull! Durotan, we must move on before we are discovered.
They may be mad, but they are the only orc clan familiar with the Savage Land. We may need to rely upon their knowledge.
Husband, please reconsider. No good can come of this.
We're sent in first to make contact with the Laughing Skull clan in their village of Deadgrin. This clan is home to some of the craziest orcs you'll ever find, and although their loyalty is questionable, their skill and audacity are unequaled. They had to find a way to survive in the savage land of Gorgrond, and they take pride in their clan's identity. This is why they refused to join the Iron Horde, and now they face the same enemy as the Frostwolf clan. In the village, we find out that the Laughing Skull clan is under attack by Tok the Earthrender and several of his Goron. The village is lost, so we're sent to collect some of the Mask of the Fallen, and we take revenge upon the creatures that dare to attack.
The mighty Durotan descends from his mountain without an army. It would seem you have grown tired of living.
I have come to hunt the Iron Horde. I could destroy what remains of your ruined village, or perhaps we could assist one another.
There's clearly no love between the two clans, but they do have a common enemy, so for now, the Laughing Skull and the Frostwolf clan will work together. Durotan receives a flare and a note from the garrison, and it explains that Penny Clobberbottom is ready to spring in action. After blowing up some of the rocks, we clear the area and we get it ready for a garrison outpost. At this point, you can choose between the Lumberyard or the Fight Club, and the choice you make will change the area on which you'll quest and the storyline that you'll follow. On the Horde side, I picked the Lumberyard, which means we'll go into the jungle area of Gorgrond and find out more about the Batani and all these plant creatures. Those of you that quested through this area, you might have noticed that there's a big difference between the desolate rock area and the lush green area. This is because these two forces, this rock versus plants, they're fighting each other over dominance. The rock creatures, they're known as destroyers, and they want to turn all the land into desolate lands, while the Batani and the Janissar and all of these, they want to turn it into jungles. For this mission, they use their enemies to infect them and turn them into mindless zombies. Now, if an enemy, if it falls, then they'll use their corpse to grow their young, and sometimes they'll even take prisoners, they'll make them nice and fat, and they'll kill them to turn them into fertilizer. Together with Kaz the Shrieker and Draka, we set out to take on the Batani, and we search for Cutter, Kaz her son. Cutter's father has already fallen to the Batani, but Cutter, he's still very much alive, so we burn the corpse of the fallen, we take out some of the infested, and we kill a few of the Batani. With that done, we return Cutter to his mother, and apparently we found a dwarven outpost, and these dwarves, they have found an artifact. What they didn't know was that they would require the waters of Eutropus in order to properly use the artifact, so we collect the water, and we make our way to the artifact that waits for us within Moira's bastion. The dwarves, they were foolish to dig so deep into the earth, since this attracts the attention of the Goron. The base is overrun by them, so we take them out, we collect some of the ammo for the massive dwarven cannon, and we get our hands on the artifact called the Will of the Janissar. As we pick it up, the earth starts to shake around us, and Cutter says that a Janissar has shown up to take back his artifacts. He will stay below and use the dwarven cannon against the massive beast, while we, together with Draka and Kaz, we take on Eiu. The Janissar, it's very powerful, but together we bring it down. Draka now understands the Laughing Skull clan better. They are savage because the land itself is savage, and she has grown to respect them for it. Kaz, she joins us as a follower, and the artifact, it comes with us back to the base. That's the storyline on the Horde side done for now. Now on the Alliance side, we don't interact with the Laughing Skull clan. We party with Rangari.
Victory will be ours.
We should have brought an army to fight the Iron Horde.
Gorgrond is no place for armies. This land swallows all who enter.
We will be fortunate to even lay eyes upon the Iron Horde base.
The Rangari, they are the scouts and rangers amongst the Draenei. They learned a lot about Gorgon from observing the land, and they even picked up a few tricks from the Laughing Skull clan, but they're under assault by the Janissar EU. Talon Dark Anvil, he tried to outrun the Janissar with his tank, but the land around him, it became hostile, and he was picked up by a wild growth. We set him free, we clear a bit of the land to make it safe for the Rangari, and we set out to build our garrison outpost. You get the same choice on the Alliance side as you get on the Horde side, so you can pick between either the Lumberyard or the Fight Club, and if you pick the Fight Club, you're sent out to find Gladiator Akani. Reports indicate that a Draenei has been spotted to the west who matches her description, since they all believed Akani to be dead. She was one of the finest warriors they had, so she would be a great trainer for the troops at the arena, so we're sent out to see if Akani is truly alive. It turns out that Akani is indeed alive, and she's not alone. She, together with Beatfaced and Kashdrakor, they've managed to escape the Stonemall Arena. They're not safe yet though, since magical pendants, it will allow the ogres to track them down and kill them in their sleep. So we're asked to collect these pendants and liberate the gladiators. On top of that, several of their friends, they're still left behind, and Kashdrakor's son is also still locked in his cage. They used his son to blackmail Kashdrakor into fighting, and now that he escaped, they'll surely make his son Nazgrel fight himself. Those of you that have played Warcraft 3, you might remember Nazgrel from our reality, since he was the commander giving you some of your quests, he was part of the Burning Crusade expansion, and he always remained loyal to Thrall. In this reality, he's still very young, he's still a child, and we got plenty of work ahead of us, so we kill some of the ogres, we liberate their friends and family, and we collect their pendants. With that done, it's time to take some revenge by taking out Khorgal, chieftain of the Stonemall. His weapon has the power to take over someone's mind and turn them against their allies, but our combined Mind Might brings him to his knees. Now we have a great fighting force ready to help us out in Gorgrond. Time to go deeper into the land and find out what the Iron Horde is up to. We're sent out to meet Rangari Erdani, and she's been keeping an eye on the land, and she found out that the war raging between the rocks and the plants, it's getting out of balance. One side is beginning to overwhelm the other, so we're sent down, we take out a few of the groundlings, we burn some of the trees, and we make sure that this battle, it stays balanced. With that task done, we're told that the Iron Horde camp has been spotted, so we need to investigate. In the camp, we find a dying beast chained down to the ground, and an Iron Horde ambush, it pops up out of the ground. Naturally, they're no match for us. We liberate the dying beast, but as we do, a Gron rock thrower, it stuns us, and it picks us up.
Back to the dust with you!
Rexxar shows up, and he takes out the Gron with a single blow. I've done a full story on Rexxar from our reality, if you're interested, I'll link it in the description. The short version is that he's a freaking badass, he's a champion of the Horde. This Rexxar, however, is not from our reality, he doesn't know us. This one is from alternate Draenor, and by capturing his beast, the Iron Horde has made a very dangerous enemy. We're asked by Rexxar to gather some food and water for Nisha to help her heal, and at Rexxar's camp, we find out that he has captured Rangari Erdani. She was looking for us, so we vouch for her, and she has a plan in mind. The Laughing Skull clan, they have found a way to travel through the Goron tunnels, and will be able to do the same after collecting some crystals and some shells. Rexxar wants us to take out a few of the Iron Horde, and in their camp, we find out that they're busy with capturing Gron and turning them into weapons. We can of course not allow the Iron Horde to have such powerful weapons against us, so we need to investigate further and find out what's going on. The items collected for Erdani, they allow us to enter the tunnels, and one of the tunnels, it leads us to Brock's excavation. At the excavation site, the Iron Horde is fighting a bunch of the Goron, and one of their dead messengers, it holds a note which explains that the Ogron have taken a squad of their men, and amongst them was Corporal Tukmar. Tukmar is in research, it might give us more information, so we're sent after them, and inside the cave, we find the Corporal. The Corporal has seen some things, since the things that he says, like kill and eat, torn to pieces, please kill me, it doesn't seem good. The Ogron, they are very scary creatures. The orcs in the cave, they rather kill themselves than have to face them again. So we put the Corporal out of his misery, and we read his research. The research, it has some valuable information, since it says the following. This is magnificent. I have unearthed an artifact of unknown origin. Touching it instantly floods my mind with a vision of every Magnaron, Gron, and the like that walk Gorgrond. What's more, I am overcome with a sense that each of these creatures are appendage to me. I have found myself able to commune with them, manipulate them, and even shape their thoughts. I am returning to the Foundry to inform Blackhand directly. This discovery will hasten our purging of Draenor and many more worlds to come. Rexxar explains that ancient legends, they speak of such artifacts, crafted by the world builders to keep their creatures in check. Throughout questing in Draenor, we find more hints here and there about these so-called world builders. In truth, the Titans, they also visited Draenor and they helped shape the world. This artifact can apparently directly control and manipulate the stone creatures of Gorgrond, so they were most likely created by the Titans to help with their mission. We'll get more into this later on. First, we need to get our hands on the artifacts. Together with Rexxar, Erdani, and Nisha, we fly out to Gromkar Gulch and we take on Captain Brak.
The object we seek is here! Get them! I've always enjoyed killing Gron. Nisha, get her down here! Well done. The artifact is yours to take.
Captain Brak is defeated, and the artifact known as the Heart of Magnaron is in our possession. Time to use this incredible power and take on the Iron Horde at the Iron Approach.
There it is. There's my artifact. How foolish of me to trust Brak with something so valuable. It's a shame that you're too late to stop me. Surrender the artifact, and I will allow you to escape with your lives.
We will never surrender to you! Champion, now is the time. Use the artifact!
We will never surrender to you! Champion, now is the time. Use the artifact.
Both garrison outposts, so regardless of what choice you make, they lead to the same conclusion. They lead to this final battle at the Iron Approach, but the artifact is different. With the Lumberyard, you'll have an Earth Twister fighting with you, while the arena, it gives you an Earth Shaker. This to me suggests that both artifacts, they come from the same origin, so both of them were created by the Titans, and both the Janissar and the Macaron, they were created to help shape the land. Whatever the case, we take on Commander Gar and the Iron Horde, and we take care of business. We even take out Guk, son of Gruul, but the commander figures that if he can't have the artifact, then no one will have the artifact.
No! I will die before I let you take what is mine! You will not win this war!
The artifact! What has he done? We must restore it! We must get it to safety!
See what weapons I have in my arsenal!
Gar destroys the artifact, but he's unable to defeat us, and we've dealt a massive blow against the Iron Horde.
It is over. Your defenses are shattered. We have won this battle, but without the artifact, we have far to go.
Let us rally back at your garrison, Commander. We must plan our next course of attack.
That's the main story of Gorgrond done. Time to take our new allies and resume the battle in Talador. There are many more side quests to be found in Gorgrond. You have like the Red Mushroom area that takes over people their minds, or the fallen Janissar that needs to be released, but this is the major storyline. I've mentioned this many times before, but to me, Gorgrond still feels a little bit disconnected from the overall storyline, and it's possible that they made some changes during development. Originally, they planned to have a massive train track go through the area to supply the Iron Horde with weapons and whatnot, and we still see something left over from this in the Grimrill Depot. I wonder if they had more story planned with that. The reason why they didn't put it in is because they had to change the layout of the land to fit in the raids and the dungeons, so you gotta wonder if they had something else in mind. Regardless of that though, the last thing that I want to talk about in this video is the connection between the Titans and Gorgrond. The two artifacts that we collect both give us control over the creatures of the land, so my interpretation is that one side was created to shape the land, while the other side was created to bring life to the planets. They did a similar thing back on Azeroth with the creation of giants, for example, with the creation of the Irven, and it seems like that at least for the Breakers, these rock creatures, that over the years they have evolved. It started out with the oldest of them, the original ones, they were known as Colossals. Horde players have seen the skeletal remains of these creatures in Frostfire Ridge, and generations ago, the Vandalord clan, they used to hunt the Colossi, and now they use the remains as their homes. It is said that the land of Gorgrond itself, it was formed out of a Colossal that fell, so you can imagine how big these creatures used to be. Now the Magnaron, they are directly descendants from the Colossals, and for example, Droth the Ruiner, the world boss in Gorgrond, he is one of those Magnaron. The Gron are descendants from Magnaron, and most of you will remember the boss Gruul the Dragon Killer from the Burning Crusade. He is one of the Gron. In Warlords of Draenor, Gruul and several of the other Gron, they have been enslaved to fight for the Iron Horde, and Gruul himself will become a boss in the Blackrock Foundry. Then there are the Ogron that fall in the same lineage. These creatures, they're not very intelligent, but they will follow orders and they are still very powerful and very dangerous. Those are the rock creatures and their evolutions. Now, you also have hints here and there about the Goron and the Ogres, but I couldn't find a simple source stating that they were actually descendants. Now, the Janissar, they are demigods and they revert by the Botani, and it's very likely that they also evolved. They probably evolved into the lesser creatures that we see all the way down to the Potling Nibblers, but I couldn't find a source to directly confirm this. Now, on our planet, on our reality, the evolution was also there, but it was usually stimulated by the old gods. For example, the Irven, they were hit by the Curse of Flesh, which eventually turned them into dwarves. So I wonder if we'll see a similar thing on Draenor, a similar source behind this, or perhaps it was just a natural course of evolution. I personally hope that we'll get an expansion without old gods for once, but time will tell. We have the titanic influences, perhaps we'll see the old gods as well. For now though, I am going to end this video, but it's very likely that we'll return to Gorgrond for some more storytelling, since we still have the Garrison campaign coming up, and of course we have the Blackrock Foundry. That still needs to unlock though, so I can't wait to see where the story is going to go. I can't see if we'll see more titanic influences, to see more of this evolution chain. I can't wait for the Ogre Empire to open up. There's still so many beautiful stories, and I hope we'll see it all. For now, thank you very much for watching, everyone. The first video of 2015 is done, and something new this year, something that I'm opening up. If you have requests or suggestions for future lore videos, you can let me know in the comments down below. I don't promise anything, I can't guarantee anything, but I will keep my eye out, and perhaps your suggestion will be used for the next video. Have a great day, everyone. Subscribe if you like my videos, and until next time, guys. See ya!
Our bond is iron. Our will unbreakable. Who will stand against us?
That, of course, was Novel 87. And this is Keshia featuring Kavo with Evacuate the Instance.
Ow! Send out the invites, it's on into High Mall. You like to tank it, come on, pull some more trash. Watch him get in chain or rolled into the crowd. Kargath is rushing me, I lead him to the fire. Kill the boss, loot the corpse, time to gear up you two. Strap to right, keep it tight, but it's pulling us down. Wrap it up, you gotta stop, cause it feels like another one.
Feels like another one.
Druids healing, scatter overload. Korra is striking, kite those anomalies. Margok and his aberrations, 10-minute fight. He's activating runes, everybody on the ass. Kill the boss, loot the corpse, time to gear up your tomb. Strats are right, keep it tight, but it's pulling us down. Wrap it up, you gotta stop, cause it feels like another one.
It's like another one.
Evacuate the instance.
Oh, oh,
Sonic's voice coming up. Interrupt the decay, healing the blue mushroom. Come on, let's raid together. Please don't pull those freaking mats. Buff up and pull the boss tank. You don't have to be afraid. Now guess who's back with a brand new strat? Got it from Manny Berry for the boss card gap. Where the butcher getting stacked, he attacked, knocked back. Oh god, he's charging at me. Twin Ogron, that Ogron. What's going on with this whirlwind and quake? The healers are oom, oom. But the boss is down, running in the next room, room.
Everybody in the raid.
Evacuate the instance.
Everybody in the raid. Everybody in the red.
Stop the trash, it's flaming me.
And let's turn in my life away. Get like this, let's be bad.
Oh, oh. Evacuate the instance.
Oh, oh.
Reset didn't work.
Oh, oh.
Stop the trash, it's flaming me.
And let's turn in my life away. Get like this, let's be bad.
Rule yourself. You want my blood? Come then, dog.
He's mine.
Stop it!
We have all lost!
A great deal in this conflict. But we stand to lose everything if we do not stop fighting and work together!
A true war chief would never partner with cowards.
Hello guys, this is Donuts Movies, and today I got another World of Warcraft lore list. In this video, I will be covering Gronind, and even though he's not really a currently relevant character, I still thought I would do a video on him since a lot of people don't really know his lore, and kinda only know him as the old NPC from Dalaran, and from that older cinematic where he kinda made a minor appearance, because a lot of his lore is contained in the novels. So, without further ado, let's just get into his story. So, Ronin was first introduced in The Day of the Dragon by Richard A. Neck, and was seen as this, like, young, reckless mage. And the time period is during the Second War, and even though a lot of orcs have already been defeated, the Dragon Maw is still making a problem for the Alliance, because through the Demon Soul, with the Deathwing's manipulation, they captured Alexstrasza, and are using her in order to breed mounts for their army, thus making themselves very hard to fight. Now on the other side, you have the Kirin Tor and the Council of the Six Mages, and next to them there is Ronin, who is looked down upon by the Kirin Tor, and isn't even trusted because of his previous mission. Now, what happened is that Ronin killed off his fellow mages in like a mission against the Orc Warlocks, and he insisted on coming alone as he knew he works better alone, but the Kirin Tor just denied his request, and they sent him an escort, and because of the spell he used, he killed both the Warlocks and the mages, and you can tell even from the books, for the rest of his life he really feels bad about it, and just wants to make it up in some way. The Kirin Tor, not trusting him, wants to send him off on a menial task to go to Grimbatol and just report back. But something else was about to happen, as the Dragon Crassus manipulates the Council as the Sixth Mage, and he sends off Ronin on a mission to save Alexstrasza. Now of course, Ronin just jumped on this opportunity, as he thought that the Kirin Tor was giving him a second chance, and sort of a way to redeem himself, as they could then see him in a better light, instead of just this reckless mage they want to get rid of. But the truth is, he was just being manipulated by Crassus in order to help his fellow Dragon Aspect, Alexstrasza, and even though his intentions weren't as bad, he was still being used. He went on his way, but of course, not sent out alone, as Varessa Windrunner, the ranger, accompanied him in order to make sure he got to his ship safely. As you might know, they got married later on from the other stories, but at the start they didn't really hit off at all. I mean, he saw her as an annoyance, as he thought that he could do just as well on his own, and she saw him as this elegant mage that she had to escort because it's like her duty, and not many elves at the time actually were with the Alliance. Now of course, just to make the entire novel interesting, the things just get out of hand, and the ships get burned by the dragon attack, so he really has no other way to get there without the help of Alstad Wildhammer and his Griffin Riders, which he didn't really like at the first time he met when they were repelling the local dragon attacks, but Varessa helps him get the support from them and delivers him to his mission location, and that is kinda the part where he learns that being kind gets you a lot further than just barking out orders at people. And that is sort of the way when they kinda start to hit off as a romantic couple. Now, through the entire book, Deathwing has been just manipulating, posing as Lord Prestor, and also trying to manipulate Ronin later on just for his own agenda. After Crassus apologizes to Ronin for manipulating him, as he saw that his manipulation, even though with good intentions, was really no better than what Deathwing was doing, and even though Ronin was pretty pissed off at first, as he thought like the Killing Tour was giving him a second chance, he still kinda understood Crassus and he agreed to help him. And in the end, he actually freed the Dragon Queen by destroying the Demon Soul. Now, I won't go too much into detail here on how it happened, but you can check out my Alexstrasza lore lesson as I cover the situation from clear perspective, so I will put an annotation in the video if you wanna watch that. After that, the battle was over, the dragon aspect was free, and the orcs destroyed, and Ronin were just starting to fall in love with Varessa, and they have been through quite a bit together, and it was looking like they would live a happily ever after, as you have in the fables in Lordaeron, but little did they know about the Third War and everything that was to come. Of course, her homeland was destroyed and Ronin's family was also dead. They were mostly killed in Underhall. So they only kinda had each other and they got married. But there was little to no break for him as Ronin was summoned by Crassus again, who needed help just while Varessa was pregnant with his twins. Now he, together with Crassus and Broxigar, went 10,000 years back in time during the period of the first Burning Legion invasion. Now, again, I won't really go too much into detail here, since it's a part of a trilogy and there is just so much stuff, but I should make a video of it at some point, like covering the entire trilogy. And you can also watch this amazing fan-made movie called The War of the Ancients, obviously. Now, I'm still really impressed by it, as they built it for like 3 or 4 years, and it's almost like a 2-hour movie, like fully animated and everything, covering The War of the Ancients, so I will link that in the description if you want to check it out and see what really happened there. What really happened there is he just assisted many famous characters like Illidan, he was even his mentor. He also saw Malfurion, Tyrande, and many others. And once they were done, Nozdormu allowed Ronin to return just as Varessa was about to give birth to his children. Later on, he becomes the leader of the Killing Tor, much to everyone's surprise. Although, even though it is like a big and an honorable role, he still doesn't really take it because he wants to, but more because he wants to take responsibility of protecting the world of Azeroth. What he really wants to do is just stay with his family, but just living a normal life wouldn't really help the world, and he would like have more influence by being the leader of the Killing Tor, and he would protect the world from all enemies. Now, after that, the Dalaran moved to Northrend, and the Killing Tor was under the attack of the Blue Dragonflight, because the leader Amaligos went insane and declared war on all spellcasters, because he thought they would bring the Burning Legion again. Mainly the Killing Tor, the war was declared on all spellcasters, but it was mainly the Killing Tor. Now Ronin had no other choice but to defend his people and go to war, and in this he was helped by Alexstrasza because she knew what was going on with Maligos, and also because she promised to keep his skin alive because he saved her back during the second war from the Dragonwall clan. Now this is sort of the pre-Wrath of the Lich King, the Wrath of the Lich King period where he makes his first appearance in game and is located in Dalaran. He also makes his first appearance in a cinematic during a trailer for the Secrets of Uldar preview thing, where he urges Varian and Garrosh to stop the fight and focus on the real threat that they had uncovered, and that is the old god Yogg-Saron that was locked up under Northrend thousands of years ago by the Titans. Now of course he has a role as the leader of the Killing Tor and he helps the Killing Tor fight the Blue Dragon fight, but after Wrath of the Lich King he didn't really do all that much, although he did have a role in Stormrage as he was caught in by the Emerald Nightmare, and he also attended Malfurion in Tyrande's Vending, where he and his accompanying Magi from Dalaran created a bunch of magnificent fireworks in order to mark their 10,000 year old relationship. And now in Tides of War, during Mists of Pandaria, is when he makes his final appearance. Now at this point, Garrosh is already waging war on Terramor and the Alliance, and Dalaran are not wanting to stay silent, because if they did stay silent, the Horde would consider that the Killing Tor doesn't really care, and that they can do just whatever they want. So, they sent Ronin and a bunch of other Magi to defend the city, and one of the Magi was Talon Songweaver, and he's one of them, but in the end he turns out he was a spy for Garrosh Hellscream, and he assists the Horde in breaking through from the inside. Now later on, Ronin notices a goblin machine flying over with a huge mana bomb, and thinking quickly, he realizes that Jaina's tower is heavily warded in magic, and that throwing the bomb to it would localize the blast and it wouldn't do as much damage. He brings Jaina into the tower and casts a portal, already deciding that he was to sacrifice himself, and despite Jaina's pleas to free himself instead of her, since he has a family and she doesn't really have much, he decides that Jaina is the one who is supposed to lead the Killing Tor, thus pushing her through the portal to safety. Almost immediately he dies from the Arcane Blast, successfully saving Jaina and localizing the blast. And that is where his story ends. Later on, he is mentioned in War Crimes by Varessa, who is devastated with the loss of her mate, and wants nothing more than to just kill Garrosh, who was the most responsible for Ronin's death. But in the end, she like meddles with Sylvanas and all of that, thinking that she can go against everyone, but in the end, like, she thinks about her children and just goes back to her previous self. Now, all in all, I think his story is pretty amazing, and even though a lot of people don't really like Richard Aenach's writing, I mean, I personally thought there was some issues with it as well, like him mentioning over and over again that he has red hair and just kind of useless things he does. But small things aside, Ronin is an amazing character, and even though he isn't really like your perfect superhero, his sacrifice in the end was really noble. Alright, and that is all I have for this lore lesson. Hope you have enjoyed, and don't forget to like, favorite, and subscribe, as it really helps out the channel and keeps all these videos going. Also, feel free to leave your feedback on what lore character you would like to see next, as I do read through all of the comments and I do take everything into consideration. Also, check out my Twitch.tv stream, as I will be streaming there a bit more seriously now, and I will also be doing the 12-hour stream, probably one day after the upload of this video. So thanks a lot for taking your time to watch this video, and see you next time.
World of Warcraft has many super advanced alien races and creatures with godlike powers, that listing all of them would look a little something like this. So, I'm going to try to break them down into sections and subsections. First off, the beginning of the WoW universe was either caused by a creator or a giant explosion, so there is no confirmed god, so to speak. But there are a lot of creatures called Eternals, who are all immortal in the sense that they cannot truly die, even if their physical body does. So, under TV tropes, they would be classified under retroactive immortality. Although, the label of Eternal in World of Warcraft lore is given out to a wide range of people of varying power scales. The Titans, Amon Thul, Ianar, Norgannon, Khazgarath, Golgoneth, Aggramar, and Sargeras probably have had the most influence on World of Warcraft than any of the other Eternals. Contrary to popular belief, they did not actually create Azeroth, but kind of remodeled it. They're like a super advanced alien race of interior decorators. The Titans are the ones that gave the dragon aspects their power and turned them into Eternals, until they lost their powers at the end of Cataclysm. Sargeras, the bad Titan of the bunch, and the WoW equivalent to Satan, is responsible for both Archimonde and Kil'jaeden, two Eternals that are pretty much his generals in the Burning Legion, with Kil'jaeden being responsible for the Lich King, a human-orc combination turned Eternal. Next we have the old gods, C'Thun, Yogg-Saron, Nazoth, and Yashraj, who are nearly on par with the Titans in power, as it is stated that they could easily take control of Sargeras and turn him into a puppet, if they so pleased. Like the Titans, they are super-powered aliens from somewhere else in the universe, and came to Azeroth after the Titans, and took control of the four elemental lords who are already there, each an Eternal in their own right. The Titans eventually came back to Azeroth and killed Yashraj and imprisoned the remaining old gods as well as the four elemental lords. Azeroth also has quite a few native Eternals and demigods, Ilun probably being the most powerful and well-known. Then there are a whole bunch of ancient guardians. The ancients are demigods of certain animals and forces of nature, with Sonaris, the creator of the druid class, being the most notable, and the four August Celestials being the most recently added to the game. A lot of the ancients died in the War of the Ancients, fighting off the Burning Legion, and Grom Hellscream killed Sonaris during the Third War. With Cataclysm, a few of the Ancients were brought back to life, since they can't really stay dead, and helped fight off Ragnaros' army in Hyjal, with Sonaris helping you kill Ragnaros himself in the Firelands. Then we have the Loas, the troll equivalent to the Ancients. In fact, the trolls believe the Ancients to just be Loas themselves. There are countless Loas, most weak, but some very strong, with the most notable Loa being Hakkar the Soul Flayer. Unlike the Ancients, most of the Loas do not have physical bodies, and Hakkar, the Blood God, tried its best to get a body of his own by manipulating trolls into performing a ton of blood sacrifices, and was the source of a huge civil war in a major troll tribe. The Tauren also have their own gods that are a little more myth, in fact, compared to the other Eternals listed so far. The Earth Mother, Sky Father, and, for the Murlocs, the Deep Mother. The Earth Mother is the creature of the land, and her eyes are the sun and the white moon, also known as Ilun. The Sky Father is just equivalent to the Earth Mother. And the Deep Mother is the symbol for all things ocean, and actually a Murloc god. The Taurens don't actually recognize her. The Naru are another super advanced race of aliens that have evolved past the point of needing a physical body, and are pretty much beings of pure light. The Naru are thought to have existed since the beginning of the universe. Unlike the other Eternals on this list, the Naru make it a point not to be worshipped as gods, and don't think of themselves as divine, even though they were able to supply the Draenei and Blood Elves, Paladins, and Priests with the same exact holy light that is used on Azeroth, leaving some speculation that T'Lun might actually be a Naru and is a source of light magic on Azeroth. Although the official explanation for the holy light on Azeroth is that it functions kind of like the Force from Star Wars. The light, or holy light, is a non-theistic religious philosophy more than it is a practicing school of magic, according to those who follow it. It follows the belief that there is a connection between the self and the rest of the universe. That connection manifests as what we feel through senses and emotions. When a person is moved in one way or another, that feeling or emotion connects him to the universe. Because he feels that emotion, he is reassured he exists. And because he exists, the universe that made him feel that emotion must exist as well. Once the connection is recognized, the person can then act upon the universe, causing changes to create feelings in others, and others are reassured of that connection between universe and self. There's also a dark counterpart to the light that is drawn upon by the exact opposite line of thought, which is a source of power for Shadow Priests. And then there are a few other Eternal / demigods that don't really fit into the other five categories. Xavius, Queen Azara, Gazarilla, Ordos, and Medivh. Xavius was the right-hand man of Queen Azara and the second most powerful Night Elf before being turned into the first Satyr. Queen Azara, the most powerful Night Elf, was given extra power by the Old Gods and turned into a Naga. Gazarilla was a pet of the Old Gods and is most likely just a joke character, as his name is very similar to Godzilla. Ordos set himself on fire and was given his eternal status by the Fire Lord. And Medivh was possessed by the spirit of Sargeras his whole life, and is an Eternal because of that. And that's it for the mythology of WoW. Or, what I really should have called it, all the Eternals of WoW.
That was Hugh Maradex with the mythology of WoW. And this is Timmy D featuring Tamalala with a song called Mob Stealer.
Wait, what? The chick stole my spawn?
Oh, you think you're actually gonna get a spawn, do you?
I've been farming these mobs for 3 hours, I think. 3 hours!
You mad, bro?
Oh, God.
Aw, you're nerd raging. That's cute.
She only logs in at night. The mean and sneaky type. She is a shrew. I've seen her here before. Plotting and wedding. Ooh, she's chatting with you. Light her eyes like for the spawn. Doesn't matter, they're just jealous because awesome skills get her so far. Oh, here she comes. Watch out for, she'll tag your spawn. Oh, here she comes. She's a mob stealer. Oh, here she comes. Watch out for, she'll tag it first. Oh, here she comes. She's a mob.
Tough love boy,
mobs. That was my mob. You saw me f***ing run up to it.
You don't get that mob.
Really?
You don't get that mob.
Really?
You don't get that mob.
Really?
Damn it, she did it again. I'm never gonna get this quest finished. Oh my god, you go I will find you and I will kill you. She literally saw me going for it, then tagged me when I was almost there.
I get all the mobs.
Ooh.
Oh, here she comes.
Here she comes. Distract you, then chat you up.
Oh, here she comes.
Watch out.
I'm a mob stealer.
I've dreamed of roaming the halls of the Titans for years. Now, this is what we call a nice find. Looks just like all the other Titan archives me lads have found. Only older and bigger.
In a few moments, we'll be dropping into... What's that? Be careful, something's headed your way. Quickly, evasive action! Evasive action!
Welcome to the Old War Experience.
Hello, this is Grand Negus, and today I want to talk about the fight against the final keeper of Old War. His name is Mimiron. On our way to Mimiron, he is located in a section of Old War that is called Swark of Imagination, which is a really cool name in my opinion. On our way, all the trash we fight is mechanical. Some of it even bears the name, Trash. A very cool little inside joke I find that Blizzard made there. Anyway, once you fought through the initial trash groups, you will get to one of the most spectacular scenic rides. And this section of Ulduar is one of the reasons why I love this raid so much. It is a shuttle train that takes you from one part of Ulduar through some tube of sorts to the Spark of Imagination. This ride on this train alone is worth going through all the bosses to get to this. It's a really great design from Blizzard, and I find that, again, it's awesome. Once we get to the Spark of Imagination, we exited the shuttle train after it turned around, because many people, once it stops, they tend to jump off and they are in the middle of the train and have to run a couple of feet. And all of a sudden, the train starts moving again. What it does, it turns around. Some people fall to their deaths because they didn't stop in time and just fall out of the train. So make sure that either you stand close enough to the side where the ramp is for you to exit the train, or stop and wait until the train has turned around before exiting it. After that, you run down a ramp and you come to a loop, a big loop that surrounds the Spark of Imagination itself. And you have small, what should we call it, bumblings. Yeah, they're bumblings running around on this track of sorts. It's much like a Frogger run, like the thing you have in Naxxramas, where you shouldn't get hit by it or you'll die. Back in the day, they weren't a one-shot kill like the Froggers were. but if you got hit by two, you were dead. Nowadays, it doesn't matter, since you have so much life, it doesn't, as I said, it doesn't matter at all. When you enter the Spark itself, you'll find a setup of the boss in the middle and some metallically looking areas on the ground that leads toward the center, and a big round area in the middle. The big round area in the middle is where the boss will be located, and the small round areas on the strips leading out are areas where several different mobs will appear. All the way in the back, you'll see a big red button. Mimiron is merrily going around his way, jumping up and down and repairing or doing something to his Leviathan that he's working on. It's basically a reworked model of the Flame Leviathan we beat as the first boss in this raid, so you have the opportunity to defeat another Leviathan.
Oh my! I wasn't expecting company! The workshop is such a mess! How embarrassing!
This fight has a very easy to activate hard mode. You just hug the wall if you are level 80, walk around to the back side of the room, and push the big red button.
Oh my! It would seem that we are out of time, my friends! Now why would you go and do something like that? Didn't you see the sign that said, do not push this button? How will we finish testing with the self-destruct mechanism active?
What it will do is it will start the self-destruct mechanism, and you will have 10 minutes to defeat Mimiron after the button has been pushed. What happens after you push the button is that fire will appear on the ground and it'll spread throughout the raid eventually. Now there is a way to avoid the entire room to be filled, which is very easy. There are emergency fire bots that are attempting to extinguish the fire. Please don't kill them, because if you are level 80 or if you are doing it as a legacy run, they might help you quite a bit, and killing them, destroying them rather, will make the fight significantly harder. Now for the fight itself, which is unaffected by the hard mode. The fire is just an additional element, so basically the entire fight works the same way whether you activated the hard mode or not, just the fire element gets added on top. We have the following achievements in this encounter. We have the hard mode achievement, which is called Firefighter. Defeat Mimiron after activating his self-destruct mechanism. We have Not So Friendly Fire. Force Mimiron to kill an assault bot with his rocket strike. And we have Set Up Us the Bomb. And that calls for defeat Mimiron without anyone in the raid being hit by the following: a proximity mine, a rocket strike, a bomb bot. Each of these three abilities is a ability from one of the units that you need to defeat. The proximity mine is an ability that the Leviathan has. The rocket strike is an ability that the VX-001 has, and the bomb bot is an ability that the aerial command unit has. The fight itself takes place in four phases. We have three different parts of the device that Mimiron is building, and we have the combined device to fight. The three separate units are the following: Leviathan MK2, VX-001, and Aerial Command Unit. Aerial Command Unit, by the way, that section is also the mount you can get when you defeat Yorxeron on 25 player mode with no lights. You'll have a chance to get that as a flying mount, which is, in my opinion, the awesomest mount in the game. Alright, the Leviathan MK2.
We haven't much time, friends. You're going to help me test out my latest and greatest creation, Now, before you change your minds, remember that you kind of owe it to me after the mess you made with the XT-002.
Is the ground unit, and he is basically a tank that you have to deal with. The VX-001 anti-personnel assault cannon?
Behold, the VX-001 anti-personnel assault cannon! You might want to take cover.
Is the medium section that is being held on a sort of pedestal, a small thing? It has the following abilities: rapid burst, laser barrage, rocket strike, and heat wave. Heat wave is a 25 player mode only ability, so in 10 player mode you don't have to worry about that. The last unit is the aerial command unit.
Now, where did I put... Oh, there it is. Isn't it beautiful? I call it the Magnificent Aerial Command Unit.
That one has Plasma Ball as a 25 player only ability. The next ability is a summoning ability. It summons assault bots, bomb bots, and junk bots. Just remember, you need your rangers to defeat the aerial command unit because it's a flying unit. Once you defeated all three units separately, they are all going to unite.
You can do better than that! Preliminary testing phase complete. Now comes the true test. Gaze upon its magnificence. Bask in its glorious... glory! I present you with V-O-7-T-R-O-N!
Forming one big device, but with three health pools. So you need to destroy or defeat each of them one more time. What's different this time, though, is that each of the units only have 50% of their health. It is therefore a little easier to defeat them. They should go down relatively simultaneously, because after a certain period, I'm just not sure how long, I think 10-20 seconds, you'll see a little bar that fills up over time, and once that bar is full, the unit will be active again with the 50% health. So be sure to have all three units defeated before one of them reaches the maximum recharge. Basically, that's the entire fight. Once you get all that done, you should have four achievements. Since if you did it in order, you will complete the Keepers of Ulduar in your respective difficulty level, since Mimiron should be the final keeper you defeated.
It would appear that I've made a slight miscalculation. I allowed my mind to be corrupted by that fiend in the prison, overriding my primary directive. All systems seem to be functional now. Clear. Combat Matrix Enhanced! Behold, wondrous rapidity!
So this has been it for me for this episode. If you have any questions or suggestions you would like to ask or add, tweet me at GrandNegus1, write me an email at towerofcommerce@gmail.com. This has been Grand Negus, Rule of Acquisition number 19. Satisfaction is not guaranteed. Bye, guys.
Well, darlings, that brings us to the end of episode 13 of Corpse Run Radio. If you'd like to join us and have an idea for a fun little segment all your own, or if you have a question or comment for one of the hosts, or if you create original or parody Warcraft music and would like to be featured on CRR, please send your audio to corpserunradio@gmail.com or message us on Twitter @corpserunradio. Contact information for our hosts is available at our website, along with links to the songs and other audio heard in today's podcast, and that can be found at crr.podbean.com, and also on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, and Blueberry. Corpse Run Radio is a non-profit World of Warcraft fan podcast. All music and sound effects are used with permission. Great big thanks this month go out to Zarheim, Blizzard, Robin Blay, Big Steve, Lita, Cameo, Rigor Morty, Grand Nagus, Noble 87, Hugh Mardex, Doron's Movies, and the incredibly talented Keshia, Silverlay Tomy, Timmy D, Tamalala, and finally the wonderful Linny Lin and Kavo 350, whose lovely song A Whole New Zone will take us out of episode 13.
I've no time for games.
Aw, come on, Sylvanas.
I can show you the zone, shining, shimmering garrisons. Tell me, Lin Lin, now when did you last find the mounts you liked? I can give you a ride, take your freedoms and feathers over treetops and mountains on a two-seat nightwing ride. A whole new zone, a new fantastic map of you. No path to tell us no, or where to go, or say we're only playing.
A whole new zone, a dazzling place I never explored. But when I'm way up high, I want to die. Now I'm in a whole new zone with you.
Now I'm in a whole new zone with you.
Unbelievable graphics, indescribable latency, wiping, crying, and leveling through an endless expansion. A whole new zone.
Don't you dare run.
Drop
the drain or get better.
I'm like a death, my grip. I'm going to flip. Please take me back to where I
a whole
used
new
to be.
Zone.
Every phase is disaster.
With new horizons
every
to
moment's
pursue.
More casual.
I'll chase them anywhere.
This isn't fair. Let me leave this whole new zone for good.
A whole new
zone.
That's where I'll be.
Just
a thrilling place.
A scary place.
For you and me.
Wait, no, I don't like this expansion. It's not gonna pull me in. No!
What are we if not slaves to this torment?